Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest running podcast, now in our 18th year. As always, I'm your host, Jess Marquez, and our guest today is E. Sequoia Simmermeyer, chairman of the National Indian Gaming Commission, to talk about the record-breaking run of success the tribal sector is experiencing, the commission's stance on high-interest topics such as cybersecurity, and its outlook for 2024 and beyond. Today's GGB podcast is sponsored by IGT. IGT is paving the way of cashless gaming yet again. With 14 properties live in North America, Resort Wallet combined with IGT Pay is quickly becoming the preferred method of cashless gaming for both players and operators. Learn more at igt.com/cashless. As a federal agency, the National Indian Gaming Commission plays a unique role in helping to oversee and regulate a tribal gaming industry that is sometimes at odds with federal and local authorities. However, with over 3 years now at the helm of the NIGC, Chairman Sequoia Simmermeyer is more than capable of tackling some of the sector's biggest challenges. He spoke with GGB Managing Editor Jess Marquez at October's Global Gaming Expo in Las Vegas. Hello everyone, we are live from G2E 2023 with none other than Sequoia Simmermeyer, Chairman of the National Indian Gaming Commission. We just spoke earlier this year at IGA and we're meeting again. Thank you so much for joining me today. How are you doing?
Doing well, thank you, and thanks for the opportunity to talk again. I really appreciate it.
Of course, you know, it's been a challenge getting here. It's kind of logistical snafus, traffic and all that stuff, so thank you so much again for dealing with all that and helping me out here.
Not at all.
So I want to start with, you know, one of the big topics that I was curious about back in San Diego was the revenue figures for 2022, which at the time was not finalized and has since been finalized in the last time we talked. So $40.9 billion was the number. Just kind of want to start off just like one thing that I noticed in the reporting of that was that some people had noticed that the process in which that you guys had reported those figures was a little bit different from years past. Is that correct? And, you know, moving forward, can we expect that same kind of process for 2023 or is it too early to say?
You mean in terms of collecting the data and information?
Yeah.
Sure. So we... I think the adjustment was a clarification that the commission had been working on for some time about the calculation of what's called the assessable gross revenue,
Okay. Which
is a number unique to the NIGC's calculation of its figures. There had been just the opportunity, as we looked at our regulations, to provide clarity and consistency across them, to be able to clarify, you know, the reporting requirements that we were looking at and how we're interpreting the information. We determined with our team of auditors that it wasn't a significant difference in how it was being calculated, but at least it provided some consistency. You might know that the way that the data is collected is through independent audits that the operations and tribes administer. And so it helped in that sense through clarifying it in our regulations and in consultation with tribes to understand the impact of how it was being interpreted to bring the number to have it consistently kind of reported across. It doesn't, and as you said, in looking at the matter, it didn't make a significant change in it, just for consistency's sake.
One thing that was noted that, and if you, you know, obviously this is just off the top of your head if you don't have the exact figure, but I saw that I believe it was 9 new venues that came online in 2022, something like that, correct?
We have to confirm the number for sure, but there was some growth for sure.
Okay. I mean, $40.9 billion. I mean... I suspected that it would gross 40, but I mean almost 41 is staggering.
Yeah.
I know obviously as an agency it's not your job to comment on such things, but I mean that's quite impressive.
I think one of the things that we have the opportunity at the agency to do is to report out, you know, the hard work and the decision making that the tribes as leaders and their operations are doing in order to make it a success with that national picture. Of course, there's always challenges at the local level, and different communities have been recovering from the impact of the pandemic in different ways. Not all properties reopened fully, but there was a lot of dedicated decision making that went into it, I think. And I think that in being able to talk about the national picture and recording that over the many years, we've seen, with the exception of kind of 2 instances in the last 20 years, a very consistent growth. And again, this year being a historic number. And I think it speaks to the framework and the system being a process that allows for Indian gaming to have this type of growth and this type of consistency. And again, as an example, the dedication, the commitment of tribal lawmakers working with the regulators and ensuring with the regulatory community that it remains a sustainable resource.
And the thing that is quite impressive to me as somebody who views the industry, obviously, from a very global, comprehensive lens, from my side on the GGB News side, I see stories come across my desk, so to speak, every week of regulatory mishaps, fines, penalties, and such, on and on and on. And I am consistently amazed at the consistency and just integrity of tribal gaming as a whole, and this growth, not just the growth, but also the growth with the limited number or even absence of, regulatory gruff is it's quite impressive to me, as I said. One other thing that I wanted to touch on again, which has also since been finalized since we last spoke, was the regulations regarding key employees and primary management officials. I understand that was finalized last month, correct?
Yes, we did.
And could you tell us a little bit more about that and kind of how that's come along since the last time we spoke?
Sure, thank you. And thanks for the interest in that. I think it's a significant tool that we hope the regulations are providing for tribes just to create sort of a modernized way of assessing risk at the local level, empowering particularly tribal lawmakers to say how are they going to use background licensing at the local level to ensure their goals for managing risk. That publication touches three different parts of our regulation, which I haven't looked at for some time, but it makes significant, in addition to sort of empowering tribes, it modernizes it in doing things like removing a salary threshold. It does that would require licensing. It creates a more defined process for the National Indian Gaming Commission and its role in reviewing the licensing the tribes do. But that effort in the regulations is actually one part of a number of efforts that are being done to help modernize and ensure greater compliance and sustainability in how background licensing is done. One key component to that is acquiring criminal history record information. And so the NIGC in its role has been able to help work with tribes and with the Federal Bureau of Investigation to help ensure that information is reliably stored and reliably used. And that wouldn't have been possible without the significant engagement from tribes. So whether it was updating memorandums of understanding, creating outreach technical assistance in the area, creating an audit process, particularly for tribes, making substantial investments in their staffing and their policies and procedures. It was very much a collaborative effort to bring us to that point. But that regulation, I think, was a good example of how the Commission's been dedicated to making sure our regulations are responsive and modern and kind of address the risk as it is today and will be in the future.
Is that something that you've got a lot of feedback in the last 6 weeks or so, and especially here at the show?
Well, we have now for a number of months been getting a lot of feedback and engagement. One of the things that was significant is that in addition to consultation in a number of different ways, tribal leadership, the public rule went out twice for a proposed publication and feedback. And I think that, like other efforts, including redrafting of model MOUs and so forth, it helped to, I think, develop trust with the regulatory community about our intentions and efforts in doing this. And so, again, it wouldn't have been without support, particularly from the tribal regulatory community, to help understand and help to implement these changes.
So, oh boy, okay. So this is the topic last time, if I remember correctly, it was kind of thrown in at the end, almost as like a as a touch on, but
yeah.
Let's talk about timeliness, especially since then. Cybersecurity.
Yes.
So obviously it goes without saying, anybody who follows the industry knows what's happened the last 6 weeks or so within the commercial space. One thing that really interested me from your guys' perspective is I saw the statement you guys put out in response to the attacks. I want to read part of it here quickly. So, quote, "Cyber-related attacks impact organizations, big and small, have increased in recent years and are not going away. To significantly reduce risk to IT systems, it is prudent for organizations to employ a layered, redundant approach to cybersecurity. Could you touch on kind of the, you know, what's, you know, been the response there, and kind of just reiterate, you know, the commission stance on cybersecurity, and especially in relation to, I believe it's called the defense in depth method. Could you speak on that?
Sure. Well, I mean, thanks for asking and bringing up that topic. I think one thing it's important to make clear is that we have been for a number of years producing tools to help the Indian gaming and the broader regulatory community and to participate in that and leverage resources and knowledge around that topic because it's a challenge that's not specific to any one industry and it's a global concern that everyone is dealing with. I think that I want to make one point that information we released wasn't in response to particular attacks going on.
Thank you.
The timing of that was we have been, if you look back for a number of years now, providing technical assistance and providing threat alerts that are out there. And it touched on a theme that we've been touching on for quite some time, as has the commercial gaming industry and other parts of the non-gaming industry. And we can't speak at all to those specific attacks, mm-hmm. but I think that it's important that we have shared the message, as we know state regulators have, and best practices across the industry amongst the operators themselves, that preparing for and communicating and collaborating and having making those investments is one thing that we can all do. But it's definitely it's not a phenomenon unique to any one industry, unique to gaming. Whether that's Indian gaming or non-Indian gaming, it's something that everyone is dealing with. Some of the resources that we've been developing in cooperation with all parts of the industry, including commercial folks and non-tribal regulators, has been to leverage partnerships at the federal level with agencies with deep subject matter expertise, mm-hmm. like the Cyber Infrastructure Security Agency, the FBI, Secret Service, other ones that have tools and expertise in this area. To promote that and find relevance in the gaming industry as regulators. We've also developed a number of, like you mentioned there, that's a generic general threat alert advisory that goes out based on information from those subject matter experts. We've also developed a lot of technical assistance at the local level. We have a IT vulnerability assessment, which is a tool that our technology division uses to help instigate the conversation at the local level with tribal lawmakers, and tribal gaming regulators and their operators to talk about what are appropriate next steps to kind of assess and remain diligent in that area. And as a matter of fact, this coming year, which is an effort that we've done in collaboration with Indian gaming, non-Indian gaming community, we have a October cybersecurity summit that we're having that's taking place, which was a well-attended, participated event last year. And we're looking forward to that later on in October, too.
Resort Wallet from IGT provides a digital wallet for all your players' gaming and retail needs. Your players will love the convenience of IGT's cashless gaming solution with none of the hassles associated with using cash. And with IGT Pay, IGT's exclusive payment gateway, your players can fund their cashless wagering accounts from multiple external sources simultaneously. The benefits of cashless gaming are amazing. No more waiting in line at ATMs to get cash. No more waiting in lines to redeem your tickets, and no more waiting for service when your ticket printer jams. Learn more at igt.com/cashless. We'll go ahead and move away from that for now, Like I said, can't imagine how much you've been bombarded and inundated and everything like that in the last few weeks, especially here at the show. One other big topic that is becoming increasingly spotlighted in Indian gaming around the country is compact negotiations or related thereof. And now I'm not asking you to comment on specific, I know that you can't comment on that, but broadly speaking, we have some examples of these come to my mind. Obviously, are Oklahoma, New York, Florida to a certain extent, obviously, with what's going on there. One thing that was a big theme back in San Diego that I'm interested to hear your thoughts on now is that it was brought up that Class 2 was kind of almost like experiencing a renaissance, or like more tribes were looking at Class 2 in response to the effectiveness or non-effectiveness of compact negotiations as a way to offer their games. Is that something that you still are seeing, or I guess broadly speaking,
What is the commission's role in kind of monitoring these things, or just keeping an eye overall on the way that these things are going?
Sure, no, I appreciate that. And, you know, on the topic of the negotiations and measures leading up to a compact, you know, the Indian Regulatory Act doesn't provide really a role for us as the federal regulators in that process. You know, in general, the importance of Class II in Indian gaming, I think one thing is that it's unique to Indian gaming, and, you know, it was developed as part of the compromise or the balancing of interests that I think lawmakers were looking at when they enacted IGRA. But that, you know, the offering for Class II is a decision by tribes at the local level, and it can be, I think, that we see it from the regulator's perspective, you know, for a variety of reasons, whether it's a, you know, commercial determination or kind of a, as you mentioned, like a way that they can provide options for their kind of future development. And anecdotally, in some parts of the country, it's definitely, you know, becoming more and more popular for a variety of reasons. From a regulator's perspective, I think the most important thing for us to be mindful of is making sure that our regulations about the operation of Class IIs are, you know, modern, they're flexible, they're responsive. And so there's always an opportunity to look at how we can update either through guidance or through other efforts to make sure that those regulations are responsive and don't stand in the way of any sort of innovation that tribes or the industry wants to have. But that also meet our responsibility that we have under IGRA.
And, you know, you talked about the innovation. I mean, even this year, anecdotally, I've seen a lot of Class II products and, you know, new trends that are very interesting to me. ETGs is one that comes to mind, and others. Kind of similar, kind of spinning off of that a little bit, one thing that was interesting to me when I was kind of thinking about what I wanted to talk about was, so obviously, you know, we started with the revenue figures, and land-based tribal gaming obviously has been extremely successful now for a long time. But as we kind of evolve and sports betting and online gaming come more into the mix, come more to the forefront, I'm just curious, generally speaking, and this is obviously, you just take this however you want, but what is the NIGC's kind of role in that, or stance, or how does that apply to those new types of offerings that are potentially coming online?
Sure. Well, one thing that we did after the decision dealing with PASPA is we provided guidance about the role that we did play and didn't play under IGRA as a federal regulator. And so we put out what we have helped to, you know, interpret our role and our area of focus and consideration, which was really management without an approved contract and ensuring that sole proprietary interest wasn't implicated in arrangements that tribes might be making as they were considering the best way path for them forward on a new platform or a new offering like sports betting. I think that we also, you know, made clear that those decisions about pursuing that are ones that, you know, rest with lawmakers and their operations and that the regulatory community, you know, needs to take appropriate measures to address that, whether it's with updating ordinances or being mindful of partnerships that develop. And that's a great example of the importance of tribes, you know, having good partnerships and bringing that expertise and knowledge in new areas and understanding what the framework of IGRA requires. So that's been an area that we've been focused on, particularly in sports betting, for a number of years now. I think it continues to be an opportunity, whether it's through bulletins or training or other information we put out. We've also tried, as kind of new platforms are being considered, to, you know, look at how our existing interpretations and framework can be applicable to that. And whether it's, you know, while the technology might be new or it might be more popular, there's, you know, a number of positions that the agency has taken over the years to try to bring clarity or consistency in how operators and tribal leaders might interpret it. And so we've tried to focus on positions that have already been stated to try to provide clarity and also be clear about the roles that the federal regulator doesn't play and where they can find more information about those issues too.
Interesting. I know I can speak for myself and a lot of others that those will be two very high interest topics moving forward. Mm-hmm. So this has been a great discussion again. Thank you so much for joining me today. I want to get you out of here on this one. So as I understand, please correct me if I'm wrong, but you just recently surpassed or about to surpass 3 years in your role as chairman. Is that correct?
Sure. I'm beyond the three-year term, and I'm continuing to work with the agency, doing our work on making sure that we're meeting our mission and collaborating with Indian country and the regulatory community.
So moving forward, you know, obviously you guys have got a lot done even in the time that I've talked with you. But obviously, you know it better than I do that the world keeps turning. So what are some things that maybe you're keeping an eye on next year, or just some new things coming on along the line that, you know, you might be monitoring?
Sure. Well, I know that, as you mentioned before, we're coming out of a phase where over the last 18 months we've been consulting with tribes and considering a number of new rulemakings, a little under a dozen or so, that I think have helped to, as we mentioned, kind of update and modernize the area. We continue to try to find opportunities to have discussions around, you know, technology as both a threat but also an opportunity, as you talk about new platforms and ways that it can be, you know, useful to the industry, not just in the operation but also as regulators, how that technology opportunities can help us to be more effective and efficient in the work that we do. So I definitely see those as important topics to consider. Preparedness, you know, continues to be an important focus in our work. It's one of our kind of four strategic goals in the work that we do for a number of years now, and whether that's dealing with natural disaster preparedness, critical event response like active shooters, it's important for us, I think, to help keep that conversation going and look at what's the appropriate role for a regulator at the local level, especially to assess and mitigate that risk. You know, oftentimes in many communities, you know, the gaming floor might be the largest gathering space in the community. And IGRA's, you know, clear in its expectation that environment, public health, and safety of patrons and staff will be a consideration, particularly at the regulatory level. So opportunities to continue that discussion and positive best practices that we see in that area, I think, are absolutely important things for the agency to continue to do.
Well, Chairman, this has been great again. Every time I come away, I feel like I'm a little bit smarter talking with you. And again, these are very, very high interest topics, both around the industry and, you know, industry at large. So thank you again. And until I see you again, best of luck. And thanks for coming on.
Likewise, Jess. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Of course.
We thank you for joining us on this episode of the GGB Podcast, sponsored by IGT. With IGT's Resort Wallet, your players will experience the convenience of digital transactions throughout your resort property. Learn more at igt.com/cashless. To learn more about Chairman Simmermeyer, the NIGC, and all the important issues in gaming, subscribe at ggbmagazine.com. To stay current with the weekly news of the gaming industry, subscribe to ggbnews.com and use the coupon code GGB180 for a free subscription. Don't miss an episode of the GGB Podcast by subscribing on Amazon, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts today. Thanks, and we'll see you next time.